From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. As we commemorate International Women's Day and Women's History Month, it is an honor to welcome an executive with more than 30 years of international experience in the private, nonprofit, and public sectors. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Alice P. Albright, CEO of the Millennium Challenge Corporation. MCC was created by the U.S. Congress in 2004 under the administration of President George W. Bush as an alternative model for foreign assistance and to complement the main aid agency known as USAID. According to its website, MCC focuses on good policies and good governance, country ownership, and results, as well as creates an enabling environment for private sector investment. MCC's primary mission is to reduce global poverty through economic growth. Whether developing climate-resilient solutions or providing inclusive and equitable investments, MCC aims to create lasting change and a better future for hundreds of millions of people around the world. At the helm of MCC is Alice P. Albright, who provides strategic leadership for this unique foreign assistance agency, which commands strong bipartisan support. According to MCC's website, prior to her post, Ms. Albright served as the CEO of the Global Partnership for Education. As a political appointee of the Obama administration between 2009 and 2013, she was the executive vice president and chief operating officer of the Export-Import Bank of the United States, that's Ex-Im Bank. Beforehand, she was the chief financial and investment officer for the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, known as Gavi. Gavi is very important, particularly in light of the recent COVID pandemic. Prior to working in international development and government, Ms. Albright was a banker focusing on emerging markets, working principally at J.P. Morgan. She also served on two G7 Gender Equality Advisory Councils, appointed first by the President of France for the 2019 G7, and subsequently by the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom for the 2021 G7. And Alice P. Albright joins us in studio at the VOA News Center here in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to be here, and what an honor to be able to be part of the VOA. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And I do want to mention before we begin that our listeners and viewers may want to know or are curious to know that you are indeed the daughter of former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, a woman I also had the privilege of interviewing some 20 years ago. And I was actually inspired to interview you and invite you to the show as I was Ex-Im Bank Chair Rita Jo Lewis. I saw you both at the end of or the middle of December of last year at the U.S. Africa Leaders Summit, participating very actively. And I said to myself, I must get these ladies on the show. Yes. So she was our guest several weeks ago. At any rate, Ms. Albright, let's start with the basics. MCC is quite unique, as I said. It was created under former President George W. Bush, and it has stood the test of time. It commands bipartisan support. As we mark your 19th anniversary, coming up on 20 years, how would you define, in your own words, the agency's unique mission and model?
Well, again, thank you so much for having me. And it's wonderful that you also have interviewed my dear friend, Rita Jo. She's doing a great job over at Ex-Im Bank. So MCC, as you said, was created in 2004 with the intention of doing international aid in a somewhat different way. And our mission is to fight poverty through economic growth. And our business model is quite distinctive. We start with a very selective process for determining the countries with whom we're going to work. There are essentially two pieces to that. One is whether or not a country is low income enough. And the second is whether or not a country passes what we call our scorecard. Mm-hmm. And the scorecard measures three essential policy areas. One is a country managing its economy well? The second is whether a country is investing in its people. So these are investments in health and education, for example. And third is whether or not a country is on a strong democratic pathway and trying to fight corruption. So once a country gets through those two essential filters at the beginning, we then start working with countries to figure out jointly as partners what are the main challenges towards economic growth ahead of them. And then finally, once we do a lot of sort of design and evaluation and diagnostic work, we then deploy, in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars of grant money to it, which is significant, particularly in the current environment, to help countries invest in their biggest challenge. So from A to Z, it's in some ways a very distinctive model, and one of the things that also really distinguishes it is how much we put at the heart of what we call country ownership, which is working with the countries on the problems that they think are their priorities.
And I wonder if you could give us a sense of how the MCC model works in practice. And you did talk about some of the selection criteria. What about accountability measures? What type of measures do you have in place to make sure, you know, countries that are eligible for grants can, you know, monitor how you can monitor their progress and compliance?
So let's talk about a sort of before we actually get started and then once a project is underway. If we have selected a country, but then something happens before we actually start doing the work, there's a coup, for example, we will make a decision to either suspend or terminate our work if, for example, there's a coup. And we did that over the course of 2022 in response to the coup that occurred in Burkina Faso. Then if you look at how we actually operationalize the work, how are our accountable entities set up, what are our procedures, it's all very prescribed in terms of how money flows from us to the country to entities to actually getting the work done. So there, and then we have a very rigorous monitoring and evaluation effort at the tail end. We evaluate every single project that we've done. All of it is on the internet. It is a rich source of data and evidence, and it helps not only countries think about future decisions of theirs, but it also helps us with our own learning about how to continue to refine and do things better.
And as I said in the beginning, you know, I saw you participate in the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit, and I wanted you to give us a sense of the geographic areas in which you work. It appears that a lot of the programs are with Africa, but talk a bit about the geographic reach, some of the countries, and then we'll get into details later in the program.
You're absolutely right. The geographic reach is everywhere globally, according to the criteria that I mentioned a second ago. About 2/3 of it is on the continent of Africa. So that's really where a lot of our activity occurs, although we have in our history worked in Central America from time to time. We're currently working in Belize. We also have some significant projects that are going on outside of the continent. One, we've got projects going on right now in Nepal, in Mongolia. We're just kicking off a huge project in Indonesia. We've got a smaller project that we're working on in Kiribati. We've got something going on in the Solomon Islands, Timor-Leste. So we have a significant amount of our work outside of the region as well.
That's wonderful. Now, let's talk about your stewardship. As I said, you know, it did begin, that is the MCC, about 20 years ago. What do you, Alice Albright, what do you bring to the agency? What unique vision, emphasis on perhaps women or other sectors? Talk about that.
Well, first of all, it's an enormous honor to be at the agency, and it is an agency of incredibly talented people. So I view it as really, what are they already doing? I just happen to be lucky enough to be nominated and confirmed for the job, and it is indeed huge good fortune, because it's really a fantastic, wonderful place. So I couldn't be more enthusiastic about being there. The agency already does incredible work. Some of the things that we're currently working on right now are, for example, our new gender and inclusion strategy, which even though MCC has had a lot of experience in that area, we decided that it was important to sort of step it up a bit. So we are renewing our attention on that. We're spending a lot of time on, as did everybody, on the overall question of how does climate change and climate resilience and the need for climate resilience help? How is that sort of factoring into our work? We're very concerned about the impact. You know, as you know, many countries have experienced all kinds of dislocation and migration for various reasons. Even though we are not in any way a humanitarian assistance agency, we see the impact on countries of all of the forms of fragility right now. A number of the countries that we're working on are, in fact, our Global Fragility Act countries. Mm. So I've been able to very luckily joined. I bring perhaps a different lens on a couple of things. I used to work very happily in an education, a wonderful education partnership. And so I'm always asking, well, what are we doing about education? But it's a terrific place, and it's just a terrific honor to be able to lead it and work with all my wonderful colleagues there.
Well, education is critical for any country's economic and political health. But, of course, the sectors, in terms of the major sectors in which you work, they seem to be more infrastructure-oriented. Talk about the sectors in particular that you support.
Well, I think this is one of the more interesting sort of aspects of the model. Unlike many other aid agencies, where either they are a single sector by design, or perhaps there are a number of earmarks over their choice of sectors, we are not sector confined. We can work almost in any sector. And so the way we start defining sectors, though, is what I described earlier, which is this key constraints to growth. So that is a critical sort of fork in the road in our process with countries about then determines what we work on. Now, if you look at the breadth of sectors that we do work on, there are some clear similarities. There is a lot of it that's infrastructure, but we work with countries on what we call the basics. Do they have energy? Do they have a road transportation network? Do they have an agriculture system that is scalable? Do they have health? Do they have education? Do they have transportation? Do they have ports? And so the absence of those tend to be major impediments to a country's growth pathway, which is why we end up working with them. And I can give you some great examples to just really boil it down to specifics. I was just in Sierra Leone last week, and that country, through in working with them, we've come to realize that it is in major need of upgrade to its electricity network. There's a significant part of the country that does not have any reach of electricity. They also have a very fragmented generation capacity. It's very heavily reliant on diesel right now. Their transmission and distribution lines are very inadequate relative to where the population lives. And so the impact of that, and I was in a village talking to community members about what is the impact on their life of not having electricity. They're not able to get their businesses off the ground. The children are not able to do their homework at night. Babies are being delivered in some cases by flashlights. And so lack of electricity in a country is a fundamental barrier. So we are in the process of helping them identify what are the particular gaps in their overall energy landscape that need to be invested in. We're really studying those carefully with the government. And then as we proceed, we will probably invest a significant amount of money to help them upgrade their energy network.
Well, speaking of energy and Africa, it leads me to mention, for example, the fact that the United States now, under President Joe Biden, is really trying to up its game with respect to engaging in Africa based on the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit. We know the First Lady was recently in the continent, and that he himself, that is President Biden, will be planning to go, all in this effort of engaging in with Africa. So how do you coordinate, that is, MCC with other aid agencies? I mean, specifically with regard to Africa, Prosper Africa, there is, in fact, I think, Power Africa. I assume, you know, there is some level of coordination which would help each of these separate entities accomplish its goals.
Yes. I mean, first of all, the president and the administration, the vice president, the first lady have indicated significant interest in the continent. And the African Leaders Summit in December, I think, was a real success and a very important moment in terms of continuing to foster strong relationships on the continent. And it was really an honor for MCC to be so involved in that. We signed our first regional compact for just a little bit over $500 million that enabled us to help Benin and Niger build a road transportation network that will increase trade between Niamey down to Cotonou. And we also had a number of terrific meetings with heads of state. So it was a really successful few days, I think. We found it very, very valuable. So we're very excited about that. And we now spent, you know, to get to the second part of your question, we are in regular contact with our sister agencies, USAID, USTDA, the DFC. We talk to the State Department a lot. You know, the Peace Corps is beginning to congratulations mm-hmm. to them, get their folks back out into mm-hmm. the field, and we're often in coordination with them about how we can work together on various pieces.
That's excellent because, of course, Africa wants to integrate through the creation of the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement. So yes. this regional type of compacts that you just mentioned between Benin and Niger, that plays right into that overall goal of the continent.
Yes, it very much matches what the continent aspires for itself. When you talk to leaders in the country, what you hear about is how interested they are in greater integration as a way of driving economic growth. And there's all kinds of interesting statistics that compare the degree of regional trade with other parts of the world. And there's certainly room to grow there. So this authority, just by way of background, we got this authority in 2018. Mm-hmm. It is a difficult authority to use because each of the countries that are involved in a regional compact have to stay eligible to work with MCC. And then the project itself has to be itself eligible according to our various measures. So Benin and Niger was the first one, and we're now looking forward to getting on with it in terms of the implementation. We are also working on a regional power integration, a compact that will be essentially situated in the Côte d'Ivoire, and it will map the geographic footprint of the West African power pool and will help bring greater investment to, it's in the early stages, but is likely to bring more investment to that power network, which is essential to the overall power availability in that part of the continent. And then just in December, our board approved a third regional compact, which will be initially situated in Senegal. But we will start, and some of its neighbors, but we've got to start the process by looking at what are the main sort of regional integration opportunities that could be in and around Senegal, and then we'll go from there. So it's a very powerful, difficult to use, but very powerful authority, and we're very enthusiastic about using it not only on the continent, but you can also think about where it could have application elsewhere in the world. One country that I forgot to mention that is outside of the African region is Kosovo, and we have just kicked off a very important battery storage program there that will help that country begin to be on its journey of greater energy efficiency and introducing more forms of renewable energy. So we're very excited about that one, too. Perhaps at some point there may be some way to do some regional work there as well.
That would be terrific. We'll get into other regions in just a moment. But first, you are listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Alice P. Albright. She's the CEO of the Millennium Challenge Corporation, and that's an innovative and independent U.S. foreign assistance agency helping lead the fight against global poverty. I'm Carol Castiel, and this is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol_Castiel or connect with us on Facebook at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Here's a shout out to two of our most loyal listeners and Facebook fans, Ibrahim Abba from Nigeria and Tony Zola based in Thailand. Thank you guys for listening and always following our programs. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, Ms. Albright, let's turn now to a country that you are going to, I think, in a week or so, and that's Morocco, one of your major places that you have invested. Talk about the Morocco Land and Employability Compact, which is about to close, I understand.
Yes, and we're very enthusiastic about this. This will be my second visit to Morocco since I joined MCC, and we had a terrific visit the first time, so I'm eager to come back. And of course, as you know, the United States and Morocco have a longstanding and very happy and productive relationship that touches on many, many dimensions. So we're very eager to go back and be there. We have deployed in Morocco over the course of our work about $1.1 billion. So it is one of the largest recipients of MCC funding, period. We've done two compacts. We're about to close out the second one. As you mentioned, it's the Land and Employability Compact. It's for about $461 million. And it will essentially focus on two things, training and education on the one hand, and land reform and land rights and land titling, which are important. Both of those you can see as being important issues with regard to the growth pathway for Morocco. So we'll be there for few days, we'll be closing out the second compact, but also stepping back a bit and celebrating the overall relationship that we've had very successfully with Morocco as we begin to now transition and hand off all the work to the Moroccan government so that they can sustain all the investments that we've been making.
That's terrific. Well, before we leave the continent of Africa, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Cabo Verde.
I know.
We have a lot of interest in Portuguese-speaking Africa. I know Cabo Verde has benefited, is that not right, from at least two compacts? They're quite...
They have done a super job. I was there very briefly in August, and we have a terrific relationship with Cabo Verde. We do have, at the moment, a practice that we're not in a position to do more than two compacts at the moment. So we're not in a position to do more in Cabo Verde, but if and when that changes, we could begin to look at it again, perhaps.
But I'm sure they'll be first in line if that's the case.
Well, they were a fantastic partner, and we really enjoyed working with them.
And what about Mozambique? Will you be working there? That's a troubled country now. There's some civil conflict in the northern part of the country. But to what extent are you going to be working in Mozambique?
Well, we've got a huge compact that is in the development stage in Mozambique. And it is, as you've indicated, one of the most fragile countries in the world. It is one of the Global Fragility Act countries. It has a huge coastline, and it is... suffers from significant vulnerability to a lot of storms and hurricanes on its coast. I mean, it's a long country with a big
Yes.
coastal area and very, very dependent on a lot of fishing and coastal activity for a lot of its livelihood. And you're absolutely right, the northern part, Cabo Delgado, is experiencing some real difficulties. We are there, however, anyway, and we're very happy to be there. And we're working now on a significant program that will bring together, we're still in sort of the development stages on it, but probably some investment in roads and transportation, some in agriculture and fisheries, and some also around different types of agricultural issues. We're still working it out. But the team is down there heavily investing time working with the government, and I expect that we'll be in a position to bring that one to fruition sometime in the coming months.
That's excellent. Well, we have quite a number of viewers and listeners in Indonesia.
Okay.
So I'd love you to talk about your work there.
All right. So we've just signed, we have negotiated, we haven't signed it yet, but we will soon, a $650 million compact in Indonesia, which is also a significant number. It's our second compact in Indonesia. And this one is focused on some of the provinces outside of Jakarta, which tend to be experiencing quite a bit lower income than what you see, you know, sort of in and around Jakarta. And it's going to focus on principally infrastructure finance and small business finance. What we see in that country is that there's a lot of need for getting financing down to different forms of projects, and due to the sort of regulatory environment around their financial markets, that money does not flow in the way that it should. So we've got a whole set of things that we're going to be working on with the government outside of Jakarta to help that. And we think that one of the benefits of that will be that certain climate-resilient, climate-related projects will get some of the financing that they've struggled to get so far. So we're very excited about it. We expect to sign it sometime in the coming few weeks, and then off we go.
Excellent. Well, another interesting region in which you work is Mongolia.
Yes.
Talk about, again, your projects there.
So we've got a significant water project that is underway in Mongolia, in Ulaanbaatar. One of the impacts, again, it's a climate-related situation. The water availability in Ulaanbaatar has been significantly degraded by the impacts of climate. So we're in the process of building a whole water treatment facility there that will help much more plentiful and available water be available to the citizens in Ulaanbaatar. So we're very excited about it. And it's a very important part of the world for us to be working in.
Indeed. And Nepal?
Nepal, we're in the process of getting started on another significant investment there that will be principally on energy and the electricity system there. It's taken some time for us to get started there because it took us a while to get it all approved. But we're now on our way. And again, it's a very important investment for us given the part of the world that that's in.
Exactly. And you're also working in the Solomon Islands, correct?
Yes, well, we've got two programs that are on our radar screen right now in the Pacific Islands. One is the Solomon Islands, where we're working in partnership with the IFC on some interventions that will principally help business and tourism. And then we're also in the final stages of designing a program. It's in both cases, these are our smaller programs. In Kiribati, that is going to be around job skills and employability. Now, both countries face significant issues, not only due to climate, but also due to the question of whether or not their populations have the right skills to be able to do what they need to do in the 21st century job market. So we're sort of zeroing in on both of those types of considerations and are, again, very happy to be able to do our part to maintain strong relationships with that part of the world.
Indeed, I can imagine. And another Lusophone country that I must mention, Timor-Leste.
Timor-Leste.
Talk about that relatively new country and what you're doing there.
So we're doing a significant water and education project there. We're in the middle of we've just embarked. It's $420 million. About $60 million of it is for education. It's the Talent Project, and that focuses on secondary schools. And then the rest of it is going to be building a whole new water treatment and drainage program, really, that will touch almost all of the country. This will probably be one of the most significant packages of international aid that the country will receive. So we're very excited about it. And in addition to being very related to how it contends with the climate conditions surrounding it, clean water is also a health investment. So we hope to have a really positive impact on overall health standards on the island, in the country as well.
Very good. I mentioned Timor-Leste. It's also known as East Timor in English. But, as we close, Ms. Albright, I'd like you to reflect on or even look forward to the 20th anniversary of the Millennium Challenge Corporation and, how you, see this milestone in terms of its progress, accomplishments, or any shortcomings.
Well, it's a big moment for us, and everybody is gearing up. It will be, in part, a look-back moment, and for everybody, well-deserved and rightly so, to have a moment of reflection and celebration about the fact that this incredible experiment that was started by President Bush and his administration, did it work? And the answer is it's worked. So there will be a real moment of celebration about that. The look forward piece is to think about how the essential bones and components of the agency can continue to move forward and make a difference in the world that we're in now, which is very different from the world that we were in when the agency was started. So there will be a lot of thinking about, how do we work? Where do we work? What kind of products do we offer? And how can we make sure that we're being as relevant as we possibly can be, given the challenges that we expect to exist over the next 20 years? So it's going to be 2024. We'll invite you. Please come. And we're very, very excited about it.
Do you anticipate continued congressional support?
Yes. Yes. I mean, we have to continue to adhere to why, how do we work, why were we set up, and be very faithful to what our business model is. But, we continue and we work very closely with Congress to make sure that they are fully aware of all that we're doing. But we have strong support and we're very, very, we cherish it and we treasure it.
Alice P. Albright is the CEO of the Millennium Challenge Corporation. Ms. Albright, thank you for your work and thank you for taking time to do this interview here at the VOA News Center.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's just wonderful to be here and appreciate your interest. And thanks for all the good work you all are doing.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thank you.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo and Gary Jaffe. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.